What's up, Strength Talk and Shop Podcast? Excited to have you guys listen to this week's episode. Again, I'm your host, Matt Smith. We got an awesome episode coming up here with Monty Sparkman. But before I get started on that, we are presented by Optimum Nutrition Athletics. We all know that protein is a key to muscle recovery, and Gold Standard's best-selling 100% whey protein provides 24 grams of protein that mixes easily using just a glass and spoon. Gold Standard 100% Whey is made in their state-of-the-art facility. It's banned substance tested by Informed Choice. And with Optimum Nutrition Athletics Program, you can get different items such as their Pro Gainer, which is their mass gainer, protein snacks such as the Crisp Bars, wafers, cake bites, and almonds. And then after dominating the sports nutrition industry for over 30 years, newly created Optimum Nutrition Athletics brings that same trust and quality that knows how to put convenient options for protein in the hands of athletes who desire to become bigger, stronger, and better at their sport. This is something that you're interested in getting into your facility. I highly suggest that you reach out to Dave Harvey of Optimum Nutrition Athletics, where his information is down in the show notes. Okay, guys, I really suggest you go out there and get there. If you're maybe sitting in your office, you're sitting there, you're wondering like, man, I just wish we could get some more protein for our athletes. Guess what? Optimum Nutrition Athletics program with Dave Harvey and his crew, they've got everything that you need, from those protein snacks, quick, easy, on the go. I love them for myself. Keeps me accountable and getting good, high-quality protein throughout my diet. So, listen, guys, highly suggest you reach out to Dave Harvey of Optimum Nutrition Athletics. And, again, thank you for being our sponsor. Our guest this week is Monty Sparkman. Absolutely wonderful episode. When I think of high school strength and conditioning, I think of Monty Sparkman. Back when I first got into this industry way back when, Monty was one of the first people I found online through social media and been following him ever since. Honestly, should have done this episode a lot sooner, but man, it's awesome. It's one of my favorite episodes I've ever done. Very thankful to have him on. We talk all things high school strength and conditioning, kind of a little bit about his story of getting in, which is kind of fascinating as well, and then just what he's doing now, and I just am very thankful to have him on. Thank you to all of our past guests and our future guests. Everybody that listens to the podcast, if you could do one thing for me, that would be absolutely huge. If you're an Apple user and you have Apple Podcasts, please go to the podcast page and give us a review. You can give us either the 5 stars on there. That would be amazing. You can write a review in too as well, just saying like, hey, this podcast is amazing. You should listen to it. Definitely help us with the algorithm too as well. Or if you're on Spotify, just share it out through your Instagram stories or take a picture. I'll tag in it no matter what. I'm just thankful for everybody. I'll just try to reach this message out to all the coaches, lifters, and people I can. We've got awesome guests coming up here in the future. For everybody that reached out to me in regards to wanting to be on the podcast, because I did make a couple posts, I'm sifting through about like 75 requests, so bear with me a little bit. I'm trying to get as many people as I possibly can on the podcast, and I'm just, again, thankful to so many people want to be on the podcast, but go give it that review on Apple Podcasts if you can, if it's on Spotify or whatever. Just share it with anybody you can. Share it on social media. Helps us with the algorithm, guys. Again, Monty Sparkman is this week's guest. Make sure you reach out to our sponsor, Optimum Nutrition Athletics, and everybody, stay strong. What's up, guys? Strength Talking Shop Podcast. I got the big, strong, powerful Monty Sparkman. He is the athlete performance coach at Azle High School in Azle, Texas. What's going on?
Hey, man. Thanks so much for having me on, dude. It's freaking awesome. I've been a listener for a while now, and you've had some pretty big time names on here. Like you've had some really, really, quality coaches on here. And so when you reached out, I was freaking humbled, and I'm fired up to be here, Matt. Thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate you. I know we talked about this several times already, but it's funny you say that, because like I consider you like at the top of the pedestal. Like when I think high school strength and conditioning, I'm not joking. There's a few names that come to it, and you're the one of the first people. And when you said yes, I was like, oh man, I'm gonna get to talk with Monty, because I watch all your stuff, I interact with you online, and I've beforehand, like. In like 2012, one of the first people I found online.
That's crazy. That's so wild.
And followed you ever since, man. So this
that's
is
so a, wild, man. It's I'm humbled. I can't tell you how much that means to me, just because at the end of the day, man, I feel like I'm just a regular dude. Like I'm just trying to get strong like everybody else. And I'm just trying to make better athletes and keep my job. Like like everybody else. You know, when you said that, it just humbles me. So, like, thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. It made a huge impact on me and so many other coaches, man. But, you know, my main question is, you know, obviously I know your background and stuff like that a little bit, but what made you get into high school strength conditioning? Because you've been a high school strength coach for quite some time now, but what was that kind of decision like?
Yeah, that's a great question, you know, and there's a story behind it, but really it boils down to the time in my life when I decided to be a strength coach. You know, I decided, like we talked about, when I was your age, you know, so I'm 31, 32, and I've got a wife and a 1-year-old. And, you know, I decided I wanted to be a strength coach. Mm-hmm. Well, at that time, you know, my wife, she does really, really well. And so she's not going to follow me, you know, she's not going to follow me. So yes, you know, my goal was to be a division, and I still would like to do that at some point. I still would like to be at the college level. And it's not really because I think it's better. It's not really because I think that it's a higher qualification, I guess. It's just because I want to prove to myself that I can do it. Yeah. And do it at a really high level. You know, it's just one of those things that I would still like to do at some point, you know. But back to that, at that time, you know, I'm 32 years old, just moved back to Texas, you know, wife just got a really good job, and I've got a 1-year-old, 2-year-old. And so I don't have the luxury to chase college jobs. Nope. And so when I got back, you know, it's the summertime and everyone wants interns, you know, to work for free. And when I came back, I sent out a few emails, didn't get any responses. But in 2012, I saw that North Texas, Frank Wintrick, you know, asked for interns. So I messaged him, you know, didn't really think much about it, you know, because here I am, I'm 32 years old. You know, guys are doing this 10 years younger than me. And Frank said, hey, man, let's meet up here for barbecue and talk about it. And, you know, I felt like I at least had a shot. Because he said, hey, let's meet for barbecue, you know, and, you know, being in Texas, obviously, you know, barbecue is really, really good. And so anyway, he and I met and we talked and he was like, yeah, man, he's like, it sounds like you'd be a good fit. You know, I'd love to have you. And I said, dude, I'm in, you know. And so I was fortunate being a teacher and coach at that time. I was at the middle school level that I was getting paid. And so it wasn't like, you know, I had to, you know, forego pay or anything like that, you know, still getting paid over the summer. So I was able to go up there, you know, every day and just kind of pour into that without really worrying about any negative financial implications.
Gotcha.
And so that's really kind of where it started. That was one of the best, as I told you, that was one of the best summers that I've had from a training standpoint, just because I learned so much from Frank and Dave and Sean, you know, when I was there. And then from there, you know, really started to become more involved. I think I actually spoke my first clinic in 2013 at Baylor. And, you know, I've said this, you know, I owe a lot to that Baylor staff in 2010, 2011, 2013. Coach Cazotti, you know, we went down there for a clinic. And that's when I first met him, and man, he freaking welcomed me with open arms. And from that point on, anytime I was in Waco, it was like, hey, come in, you can train, come sit on staff meetings. Here's, you know, bring your whistle, you're freaking coaching. And so the first clinic I went to was summer 2010. And then 2013, they asked me to speak, and it was on middle school training. And so really from then on, you know, I began to kind of carve out this niche of not only am I a teacher, not only am I a middle school coach, but I want to be a performance coach also.
Right.
And so I just began, kind of perfecting my coaching style, and maybe not perfecting is the right word, but just kind of refining and polishing and you make your mistakes, a lot of mistakes, you know, those, luckily those kids, the first 2 years survived and fortunate those kids that I coached in seventh grade, their senior year. So I kind of promoted with them every year. Seventh grade, I was their eighth grade. And then when they went to the high school, I went to the high school. And so, and not as a strength coach, so I was still, you know, teacher and football coach. And because the head coach there at the time had his own strength coach, one of my great friends, Jake Johnson, one of my best friends to this day. So anyway, tremendous coach. But their senior year, we broke a 32-year drought playoff run. We made it to the playoffs. And so, you know, I'm going to be arrogant and say we started that in seventh grade, right? Because they had some really, really phenomenal training in seventh and eighth grade, right? And
right.
And that's what set the foundation for their success. But yeah, man, just you know, doing that, I just became more and more entrenched in it. You know, really kind of dove into training and just began to be a sponge and just to put myself out there, attend as many clinics as I could, visit as many college campuses as I could and coaches as I could, and just begin putting myself out there, man. And, you know, if you're a young coach or you're a coach who wants to learn, put yourself out there, yep. Write articles, show what you're doing, you know, ask for critique and just be open to any of those opinions, good and bad, you know, that that are out there. And 9 coaches out of 10, if you call them up and say, hey, can I come watch what you're doing? You know, I've been a fan or, you know, I just want to learn. They're going to say, heck yeah, come on.
Yep.
You know, but I think coaches are prideful. And I think they're also, you know, unsure about putting themselves out there. And so, and so when you talk about why high school, man, you can have such an impact. You can have such an impact on kids. And that's really what keeps me here. Yes, there's a positive financial component to it. You know, we make decent money as high school coaches. You know, it's very comparable, if not more, to a lot of Division I salaries. Now, not the head guy, you know, but if you're second assistant or a lot of first assistants, you know,
right.
You can make a pretty decent living at the high school level and also have some stability to where you're not moving every two, you know, 1 to 2 to 3 years. And, you know, so that helps. But really it comes down to being able to impact kids, to be an influence in their lives, and to be alongside that journey with them.
Yep.
That to me really is what it's about, you know, because I adored my high school coaches.
Yep.
My head high school coach is the whole reason that I love training, is I wanted to be like him. I did.
Yeah.
And so that's really where my love for training started, was freshman year of high school. Dude, I can tell you that I benched 155. And I can tell you that was like the third weakest guy on the team, you know, and that's just where it started. And I'm just fortunate that I get paid to do something I love.
Yeah, exactly, man. There's a lot of stuff that we could go into what you just said, a ton. No doubt. But the biggest takeaway that I love that you said is, like, you get to see the influence that you have on a high school kid. And I can't agree with you more, man. Like, I was the same way. I fell in love with, you know, rest in peace, Coach Litteris, and what he taught me in the high school level and the love of the weight room. Like, that was where I've had my biggest impact on, basically as a man too, as well.
No doubt.
How cool is it to see not only like how you're affecting a kid, but generationally, like maybe, I can't remember who I think it was Jim Wendler talked about this, like a kid on his team had gotten a scholarship, as one of the first kids in his family to go to college. How awesome is that for you to see, being a part of that kid's journey?
So, cool story. In Texas, we have a summer conference called Coaching School.
Okay.
And it's the largest coaching convention, I think, maybe in the world. I mean, you're talking like 14,000 coaches come together.
Oh, gosh.
One of the kids that I coached in seventh grade is now a first-year coach. So we're there at the conference together as coaches. I mean, how freaking cool is that, man?
Exactly.
Like, I mean, now his dad's a coach, and I'm not saying that I had an impact like that, but obviously there might have been something there, you know? And so to walk alongside him as equals in this profession, man, how cool is that? And just to still be involved in a lot of those kids' lives 5, 6, you know, 3 years later, man, that's what it's about. And you talk about being able to positively impact those kids, man. Like that's it.
Yeah. I mean, they might have everything else be negative in their life, but that 1 hour, 2 hours that they have with you, if that's a positive influence, like, you might be that catalyst for them to change the trajectory of their life and everything like that. That's why I think it's so important to have good coaches like yourself in the high school rank that care. And then they're getting good training too, as well. Like, they're not just getting yelled at and berated all the time. Like, they're being almost uplifted. Now they get that kick in the butt when they need it too, as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, that's, you know, being at a brand new school, you know, we're kind of having orientation and they're getting to know me and I'm getting to know them, you know, and I tell them, like, I'm going to coach you assertively.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to hold you to a high standard and high expectations. And it's your job, you know, to rise to that. And, you know, we talk about that room, you know, bad things can happen in that room if you're not careful. And so, you know, yes, you know, you talk about quality coaching, you know, my job is for them to leave our program, to leave our weight room, whether it's 1 year or 4 years later, as a better individual, physically, spiritually, emotionally, mentally, than when they came in, you know.
Right.
You know, it's we call our room the freak factory.
Yeah.
And so I asked them, you know, what does a factory do? Well, it builds things. And I said, you're right. I said, you know, and my job is to build you up. My job is to build you up and make you into a freak, into a superhero. I don't want you to be average. I don't want you to be normal.
Yep.
And so we talk about those things. And you know, some kids have never heard that. You know, some kids have never heard, hey, I want you to be more than average.
Yep.
Like being status quo is not good enough. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to impact kids in that manner, to me, is huge.
By you holding to that standard too, as well, when they go out, because not every kid's going to go out and be a college athlete or a NFL pro or a, you know, pro volleyball player, whatever that's going to be, they're going to go out and they're going to get a 9-to-5 job. They're going to have a boss that's going to hold them to a standard. And if they can't hold that standard, guess what? They're going to get fired.
Yes, 100%. But also more than that, you're right. Not every kid's going to get to go to the next level, but every kid will have the opportunity to keep training and to keep bettering themselves. Boom. And that's where I feel like I can make an impact. Whenever I was the powerlifting coach at Virginia Military Institute, the kids would all be like, coach, wrap my knees, coach, wrap my knees, coach, fix my suit, coach, set my shirt. And I was, and I tell them no. And they're like, well, you know, why? They was getting mad. Like, coach, wrap our, you know, no, my job is that if you continue this after high school or after college, I want you to be able to go to a meet and compete and to operate on your own. I don't want you to depend on me. Right. And so, you know, there's a little bit of that at the high school level. It's like, I want to give you the skill set, and that's what I tell our athletes. You ought to be able to walk into any Division I, II, III, JUCO, whatever it is, NAIA weight room, and that coach be able to implement whatever program he wants to with you or she wants to with you, and you be able to do it at a high level.
Right.
I want them to be able to walk into there and say, you were coached by Monty Spartan because you did it right. And you've got competent technique. And so that's really, you know, my goal for them is to give them the lifelong skill of training and being able to perform movements proficiently. But also if they choose to go play at the next level, that coach knows they've got a competent athlete.
Yes, exactly. That's huge because the athlete's going to have confidence going to their sport, whatever it is, because they've had sound training since if they were one of those kids that was in seventh grade with you, 5 or 6 years plus training.
Yeah, six years.
You're going to get 6 years of sound training. I mean, they're going to come in there ready to go from a machine. But then, like you said, from the coaching standpoint, that coach knows, all right, I do not have to worry about this kid at all.
100%. 100%. We had an athlete go to a major Big 12 school, and it doesn't matter, you know, what it is or anything like that. But he would send me texts, coach, we did this today. I already know how to do it. We've done it. Coach, this is similar to what we did back home. And it made me feel so good because I knew that he was prepared to be successful at that level. That's a big part of it. Yeah. You know, not every kid's going to be D1, and that's okay. But every kid has an opportunity to continue to train and to continue to improve themselves physically if they choose to do so.
Well, because here's the thing. If they come in there as a freshman and they've got sound training, they maybe have not – I mean, they obviously have not come into their body yet per se, right? But they've already
set – Yeah, no doubt.
But they've already set – like Louis talks about, you got to have a base, right? They've already set –
Yeah, your base is only
– Yeah, they've already set the base.
Your pyramid's as high as your base.
Exactly. Yep. They've set the base – so now they can build maybe a little bit faster in, say, the sport per se, because they've got the weight room side kind of, I wouldn't say autopilot's not the right word, but I mean, a little bit on autopilot to where they can, hey, all right, I can hammer out my sport too as well and continue to build upon what I've already had for 4 years with Coach Sparkman. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And so that's really, that's what I'm trying to do at Azle is to create that 6-year program from our middle school to our senior level so that there is vertical alignment. So that there is safe progression and that each year builds on the next. And so then if they do go, you know, then to play at that next level, then they're able to operate that way.
Can you talk to me about that 6-year transition, what it would kind of look like here, or maybe just a 4-year kind of thing, like a kid comes in, what's it going to look like at each step of the process? You talked about the progressions and stuff like that. What have you found to be successful?
Yeah. So really if you start with seventh grade, you know, they are a very awkward individual and they're going to continue to be awkward for a couple of years. Right. I mean, middle school athletes are, and my daughter's in seventh grade. She's seventh grade. So I'm living it right now. She is in that world right now. But they are some unique individuals. And so when you talk about seventh grade, we're just trying to get them to hold body positions, to figure out the way their body works, teach them how to squat body weight, teach them how to hinge. Can they do a single leg movement? You know, can they sprint? You teach them proper sprint mechanics, teaching them how to land, how to jump. I mean, it's just basic PE stuff, right? It's stuff they should know how to do, but they don't, because that generation now is so tied to technology, is so tied to, you know, non-physical activities that we have to teach them how to skip, how to do cartwheels, how to bear crawl. So that's really what our seventh grade program is going to be based around. And then when they get to eighth grade, now we're going to load them a little bit. And so maybe it's a dumbbell, maybe it's a kettlebell, maybe it's, you know, basic barbell movements. Again, when we're talking about hinging, we're talking about pulling, we're talking about squatting, pressing, you know, but it's still very, very basic level movements, primarily, you know, single arm, fancy word, unilateral. You know, I'm not an academic, so those big words don't always come to me, but you know, just excuse me. So they have the mastery in seventh grade. Now we add a little bit of load to it. But again, you know, the movement competency, you know, again, because we're looking for them to be competent. You know, their goal, we're not making them into power lifters or weightlifters.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Training is GPP, right? So we're just using this to enhance their sport. It's not their sport, right? We're using it to enhance. So that's eighth grade. And then when they get to high school, hopefully the idea is that they have those basic movement patterns down, right? So they can perform a deadlift. They can perform a front squat. They can perform an overhead press. Everybody knows how to bench. It's like we come out, you know, like you're born and you know how to bench. We don't worry about that. But now maybe the majority of them are able to do a pull-up. You know, I mean, you know, you're going to have big kids. And, you know, that could be a struggle for a lot of them. But the majority of them, let's say now they're able to do pull-ups. And so then as a freshman, now you can begin to load them, maybe use a 5-3-1, you know, something like that that's progressive overload. That way you're able to build your base. And then as you get into sophomore, then maybe you get into some APRE or something like that. And then by the time they're juniors and seniors, now you're getting ready to do some really cool stuff with the technology, with VBT, with these different force play things that are out there, because at that point they've had, you know, 3, 4, 5 years of really, really good training. And so technique is not the issue. You know, they've got the car. Now they're learning how to drive it really, really fast.
Love that. That's such a great analogy. They just they know how to drive it. That's fantastic. I absolutely love that. And I couldn't agree with you more. It sounds to me, so what is, over time, what are some things that you've kind of changed from maybe when you first started training the athletes to now over the years and stuff like that it's kind of been successful throughout that process? You know what I mean?
One of the best compliments that I ever got was back in 2013 when I presented at a conference, and it was on middle school training. Mm-hmm. And we talked about, you know, my background is in powerlifting. You know, that's not a secret. You know, I love lifting heavy weights, and I do that because I'm not really good at anything else. And I don't even, if I'm even good at lifting heavy weights, but that's what I enjoy doing. But what she told me was, she said, "Coach, I was really impressed with your presentation because I thought you were just going to get up there and show how strong your kids were. And I thought you were just going to get up there and talk about, well, my kids can do this and they can lift that. And you really talked about the movement proficiency component of your training. And I just want to let you know that I was really, really impressed with that." And to this day, that's one of the biggest compliments that I still hold with me. And so when you talk about how has it changed, it hasn't changed that much from a philosophical standpoint. Mm-hmm. I think to me where it's changed is from a cultural standpoint.
Gotcha. Okay.
And what I mean by that is my first couple years at the high school, we did such a good job cultivating the weight room culture that it overpowered the sport culture. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is our kids cared more about what they lifted, in my opinion, than wins and losses.
Wow.
And I mean, there were statements made in that weight room. Yeah, we might have lost, but coach, we can outlift them. I mean, it's a true story. Yeah. True story. And so when you think about an athletic performance coach, strength coach, whatever you want to call us, what's the end goal?
Win ball games.
To win games, right?
Yeah, win ball games.
And so that's where I feel like I've grown, is I feel like I've done a much better job putting the sports and the sports success at the forefront versus making what I do in the weight room the focus. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes total sense.
That's a trap
a lot of coaches can get into.
No, it is. And it's so easy because why? What's the easiest thing to do is to make a high school kid stronger.
Yeah.
Like, that's the easiest thing to do. Like, they walk in and look at the weights and put on 10 pounds. Like they're just, I mean,
true. Very
they
true.
They do. They've got more hormones than they're ever going to have. I mean, they just, they're exploding with progress. And so as a young strength coach, as a young performance coach, as a maybe struggling sport coach, what do you hang your hat on? The one thing that you know is going to go up, and that's maxes.
Mm-hmm.
But as you know, that correlation stops pretty early on between improved strength and maybe improved speed and power, agility, mobility, quickness, those transferable qualities that you need to have in a particular sport, right?
Exactly.
And so early on, like, that's hard to measure.
Right.
And that there wasn't a lot of information, a lot of knowledge about speed training, about plyometric training, about power development. You know, Lou talks about, you know, strength is measured in time, right?
Right.
Well, sport is measured in time.
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't do any good if I can squat 600 pounds, but I run a 5.8 40. That doesn't do any good.
That's so true.
Or if I got a 20-inch vertical, yeah, squat 600 pounds, but I got a 20-inch vertical.
Exactly.
So coaches don't know how to train that. Well, now you've got all these different technologies with the VBT stuff, with the force plates, with the jump mats and the plyo mats. And, you know, the technology now is such that it's affordable.
Yes.
Right. You know, but still there's a lack of knowledge. And so to kind of come back around, what I'm saying is that coaches hang their hat on the easiest thing to improve. They have to begin to diversify. And, you know, people pigeonhole me all the time. Like, oh, you just care about strength. You just care about strength. You walk in my weight room right now, it has nothing to do with strength. You know, I mean, we're trying to train those transferable qualities.
Right.
But you have to know what to measure, and then you have to be able to measure it. And if you want it to improve, then you have to measure it. Does that make sense?
That makes sense, because not a lot of people have those KPIs because they don't know how to track those KPIs.
Exactly.
And they don't know what their KPI, or they don't know what their KPIs should be, honestly.
Exactly. And so they get stuck in this. Well, what's the one thing I know? What's the one thing we have in our room? Because we have weights. Yeah. And a 45-pound plate today is going to be a 45-pound plate tomorrow, 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years from now.
Exactly.
You know, that's where I've grown. You know, it's like we did away with our record board. Like that's how far it went.
It's huge.
Yeah, you know, because again, like, we've all known guys, we've all known athletes who might have sucked in a weight room, but could ball out on the field.
Yep, exactly. We all know that. Yep.
And so there's not a one-to-one correlation.
Exactly.
We had a kid at my previous school, Division I athlete. Like, he's going to play big-time college football. He is a infant in the weight room. And so you have this idea that athletic ability or sport ability does not transfer to weight room competency. And so as a coach, I have to know that. I can't train him the same way that maybe I train that average player who loves the weight room,
mm-hmm.
right? Because if I do, he's going to get hurt. And if he gets hurt, then he can't perform on the field.
Exactly.
And so that's where everything has changed, you know, trying to individualize, trying to meet athletes where they are to get the most out of them.
I love that you just said that, meeting the athlete where they're at. I think that is so tremendous. It's difficult, obviously, like you said, to do everything individualized, but man, in the long run, it'll pay dividends than everybody working off the same kind of sheet. Now, everybody has different goals too, as well. Like you said, like that kid that's an infant in the weight room, he's going to have a little bit different training than the guy that's a little bit more efficient in their movement patterns and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I mean, you know, that's the goal of my program, is to create a training experience that meets their needs.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Right. You know, we want their experience to be unique. Now, that's hard when you got one strength coach and 500 athletes.
That's really tough.
Yeah, it's really, really tough. And I'm finding that out in my new role. That's going to be a challenge. But it can be done. You just have to know how to bucket your kids. You just have to know where those commonalities are and then where the outliers are. And that's where you can kind of individualize, if that makes sense.
Well, and that comes from experience, though, too, I would assume as well. Like, you've seen so many kids, you've worked with so many people, but also, too, you talked in the beginning, and I think this is probably one of the biggest takeaways I hope people take of. You were willing to go to conferences, to clinics, to build relationships with other coaches, to be like, hey, I'm going through this right now. What have you guys done? Because maybe that coach has already run through that wall, and you can just come in behind them and gain that knowledge from them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, that I think was a big factor in my, I guess, fast tracking my progression, I guess, if I can say that, you know, because a lot of people think that I've been in this game, you know, 20 years, that I've been, you know, some people still think that I was a Division I coach. And I was a Division I powerlifting coach, but I wasn't a Division I strength. I was a Division I intern.
Right.
And so there's this mystique about me, and hopefully I'm not taking that away, you know. But I mean, fact of the matter is, you know, I've been doing this since like 2012. So I'm coming up on 10 years, you know, but I feel like I've been able to have some immediate success because I was willing to seek out those mentors.
Yep.
I was willing to travel and to put myself out there and to make myself vulnerable in collegiate weight rooms, in high school weight rooms, to kind of gain that knowledge so that maybe I can kind of leapfrog some of the mistakes that other people have had early on. And you know, now I'm making new mistakes, you know, but maybe that's what's helped me kind of get to where I am right now and kind of have the success that I've had. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's the athlete's success. You know, the athletes are the ones who benefit the most. That's like, true. You know, it's not about me. Like, I want to give them the best product that I can.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be able to do that, like, I have to be okay with not having all the answers. You know, and so whenever I can seek those out, that's what I want to do. And it's a constant process, man. As you know,
yeah.
You know, they talk about lifelong learners and talk about learning never stops. And that's true, but it's really not a cliche. Like, our profession is changing so rapidly. Things are advancing so rapidly that you have to constantly be on the forefront. Cause if you're not, you're going to get left behind.
Yeah. I mean, remember when it was just like, the only way you could really track speed was like either a stopwatch or it was Tendo units on the barbell. Now there's like, you know what I mean? Like, it's different companies. Look at it now.
Yeah. And so, you know, I mean, a Tendo unit was $3,000.
No, crazy.
And now you can get a device for around, you know, $400.
Exactly.
So that technology has become a lot more available to us lower level programs who don't have the $1 million budgets that the professional and Division I guys have, you know. So, you know, I'm excited. We haven't gotten it yet, but we've got two jump mats coming. We've got lasers coming. Awesome. And then probably this winter, I'll buy our VBT stuff, you know. And so, you know, we're going to be able to have those KPIs and to be able to track those KPIs because we've got the technology to do so. Now, can you do it without technology? You can. It's just a lot harder.
Exactly.
It's just a lot harder.
Yeah. You know?
That though, I mean, the technology makes it easy. Yeah. You know, it makes it easy.
What are some of the KPIs that you've used in the past? You know, what were some of them?
So from where I was, and I keep going back because, you know, I'm still in the infancy stage at Azle. But when I left, it was more about Fly 10. It was more about vert. And then we were just getting into the VBT markers. And so it was going to be, you know, the next progression was going to be figuring out what percentage of the max they needed to move at a certain velocity for me to kind of assess their performance or their readiness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. No, yeah.
And so really that was the next step, was because we could do it with the Fly 10, we could do it with the vert, but we hadn't quite got to that point with the VBT, just because, like, at one time we had four different VBTs going at once, like four different units. Oh. I mean, yeah, it was like three countries being represented. And it's cool. Like, it's really cool. Like, you know, like we were talking to a company in Ireland, talking to a company in Germany, company in Canada, you know, like it's, you know, it's really, really cool, you know? But we just hadn't, we were on the verge. Had I been there one more year, we probably would have figured out, hey, 77% is kind of that sweet spot to figure out, you know, power output or whatever. And I'm sure like B-Man or some of these other velocity gurus out there already have that done.
Right.
But, you know, I'm very much a under the bar train guy. Mm-hmm. And I'm very much a practical coach. And so I'm going to figure out what works in real life and maybe not what works in a lab, if that makes sense.
No, that makes sense. And what I found to be interesting too, is you only had a handful of KPIs right there. You didn't have you see some people, they've got like 20 KPIs. And I sometimes wonder how much are they really using that? Or is it just to collect data kind of thing, you know?
Well, and you bring up a good point. Good night, pretty girl. My daughter's going to bed. You bring up a good point because you can get lost in the process of collecting data.
Yeah, that's
right. And you can lose the focus of collecting data just to collect data, right? Like GPS is fixing to be really, really big in high school. Like I feel like we're on the cusp of GPS coming to, you know, high school. That's kind of like the next frontier. Well, the thing about GPS is, you know, that gives you a sea of data.
A ton.
And so again, when you talk about one coach of 500 athletes, do you have time to dive into all that? I mean, colleges have whole departments, applied performance departments, to look at the data like that. That's what they do. And so I feel like, you know, as one coach, you have to be succinct in what are your markers for improving,
yep.
Right? Because if you don't, then you just spend your time collecting data and you never get to implement the findings that you get from your testing. Right?
Yep. I couldn't agree more. It's that practical side that you just said. You got to be able to practically use it, right? You got to be able to see what's going to be the changes that need to be made or what's working.
And so I know if a kid's squat's going up, if his vert's going up, and if his fly 10's going down, he or she is probably getting better and probably improving those adaptations that are the most transferable, right?
Mm. Yep.
You know, so I mean, it just makes sense that, hey, if a kid jumps higher and runs faster and their strength is going up, probably everything else is going up too. I mean, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but it makes sense to me. And maybe I'm wrong. You know, I could be wrong.
That makes sense to me though too, but you're only one person. Like you said, you have 500 athletes. You've got to be able to understand all right, these are my main, what are the main points? Right? What are the, you said earlier, which I thought was brilliant. Like, what are the buckets? Like, what are my main buckets that I'm making here? I think that's a great analogy a lot of coaches need to think of. It's like, what are my buckets that I'm trying to fill? I'm not trying to fill 20 different kind of buckets here.
No, and if you look at the high school athlete, if you really look at the high school athlete, they need to improve in a few basic, let's call them buckets, right? Because that's kind of the word we're going with.
Right.
They need to get a little bit stronger. They need to move a little bit better, jump a little bit higher, and be a little bit faster.
Right.
So those become your KPIs. And then you can throw in the nutritional, sleep, hydration, you know, that wellness, I guess you would call recovery KPIs also, right? But really, I mean, what is it? Strength, sprint, jump, and then recovery. That's really it, right? That's really it. So if we can get really good at tracking those things, if we can get really good at figuring out what makes those go up, then I think our athletes are going to really, really be the ones who reap the benefits of that.
How do you combat that fourth one, the recovery nutrition side? Because that, to me, I feel like is just so hard sometimes.
So, yeah. And we have a tremendous culture at Azle, a tremendous culture of hard work, of toughness, almost to the point of, like, it's detrimental, you know? And so I think you constantly have to talk about it. It constantly has to be in their face. You constantly have to remind them that, hey, look, it's my job to give you what you need to be successful,
right?
To improve athletically. You going out and training on a Sunday night, knowing that we're going to train again on Monday or Tuesday, that's detrimental.
Right.
That's not good. You know, I'm kind of becoming known for don't burn the steak.
Yeah.
Well, you're burning the steak is too much heat. It's too much heat. So, you know, again, it's a great problem to have because the kids work hard.
Right.
But what we have to change is it's not working hard. Like, I can walk to Kansas City and I'm working my tail off. Or I get in my truck and drive there.
Exactly.
The end result's the same, but what happens in the middle, right?
Yep. Could not agree more.
So we have to educate them. We have to educate the parents. We have to educate the coaches that yes, we want you to work hard, but we want you to work hard at these things.
Right.
And you have to trust that I'm giving you what you need to improve. That's where the KPIs come in. Once they start seeing that improvement in the weight room,
yep.
or in your performance program, you know, then that's where you set the hook. That's where the buy-in comes in. We haven't got to that point yet because it's a brand new situation. I haven't been able to show them real progress because we haven't really had any real training yet.
Yeah.
We don't have that technology in place yet. So I think it's going to be a lot easier once we're able to show them, hey, you normally jump a 25. Today you jump a 21. What did you do last night? So you open those conversations. What did you sleep like? What did you eat like? What did you do 2 days prior? And so then it becomes, well, Coach Parkman is just being a jerk to, this is what the data says. So for example, this summer I brought a couple VBT units up and I was just kind of playing, you know, and showing them. And so this one athlete said, Coach, that was slower, right? And I said, well, what did the screen say? Yeah, it was slower. And I asked her, what does that mean? And she said, take more weight off. And I said, yeah, you're right. But that's so much more powerful, her making that decision, that athlete making that decision,
yep,
versus me as a coach telling her, take weight off the bar, because then it becomes a mandate, then it becomes an order, versus they having their own revelation as to, during this particular movement, I want to move the bar at high speed. That was not high speed. So I as an athlete have to take weight off so that I can move that bar at a higher speed. It takes the emotion out of it, right?
Yeah, so
that's the really cool thing about technology, because then it's not the coach saying it, It's not coaches being mean or coach doesn't know. It's this is what the data says. This is what the science, like, that's one of those things. I say, hey, we're using the science today. You know, I call it science. You know, hey, today's a science day. We're using science because it's not my opinion. It goes back to, what does that little device say?
Exactly. So, and at 16, 17 years old, it goes back to what you said at the very beginning of all of this. Like, it's helping them help them with their decision-making, but also educating them for the future. What's it going to be like when they're training by themselves, when they're at a gym?
It gives them ownership to their training, you know.
I love that you said that.
It gives them ownership. Hey, I love your shirt, by the way. Weak things break. Fantastic. But it gives them ownership, you know, like, and maybe that's another place that I've changed, because it used to be, you know, we're doing this and this is what's on a card. This is what's on a sheet or TV or whatever. This is what we're doing. But, but you know, I'm hesitant to ride out a big block of training because by the second week, it might be completely different. You know what
I
mean?
So glad that you said that. That is so true. I mean, how many times have you in your career written an 8-week program? And like you said, week one, you're changing stuff up.
Try day one, Monday, you have a plan. And by 10 o'clock, the plan's out the window.
Exactly.
The plan is out the window, you know, for whatever reason. And so, like, really, like, I program day to day. Like, like, for me to plan out a weekly block of training is very rare. Because like you said, by Tuesday or Monday morning, it's already shot. And, you know, that comes with experience.
Yeah, exactly.
And that comes with, you know, going back to those KPIs and going back to the different buckets with the athletes. Like, you have to be, right or wrong, you have to have confidence in yourself as a coach enough to know that, that I'm going to do this. And it's okay that this athlete isn't performing a box squat, or it's okay that this athlete isn't cleaning, because I have confidence in my training that if he or she does X, Y, Z, they're still going to get to the same result.
Exactly.
And so you have to be able, you have to diversify your toolbox, you know, and I think maybe you and Rhodes talked about that.
Yeah.
But like, yes, my background is powerlifting, but I can rattle off about 15 different squat variations that will get the same result as a back squat, depending upon whatever the athlete needs or what the athlete's situation is. And I'm okay with that. Like I'm not married to the squat. 10 years ago, 2006. Yeah, I was. 2007. Yeah, I was. I was a bench press loving, box squatting, guy. But as I've gotten more confident, more educated, and more experienced, I have realized that it's okay to have variation. And now you might walk in our room and see 3 or 4 different variations. Now in this room that I got, you might see 5 or 6 different variations. It's right. Because we've got a bunch of cool stuff in there now. And but you have to get to that point as a coach to where you're okay with seeing those different variants.
Yeah, and that, like you said, that's going to take time. But I think a big one's confidence and just kind of dropping your pride and being confident in that, you know what, this is going to work out. And guess what? If it doesn't, well, I learned something that I'm not going to be using the next time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's crazy. But, you know, Monty, we're going to wrap it up here, man, because this has been absolutely wonderful. I know we're getting a little bit late here too as well, but I just want to say thank you for being on the podcast. Before we ask the last question, if people want to reach out to you, Monty, how can they reach out to you?
Yeah, I'm pretty easy to find on social media. I'm probably on there way too much, you know, but I love interacting with coaches. You know, I really love talking with coaches, and I love sharing. I love learning. So Twitter's at Monty Sparkman, Instagram's at Monty Sparkman. And I'm on Facebook, but Twitter and Instagram, Twitter is probably the best way to reach out to me, shoot me a DM or whatever. And, you know, I'm pretty responsive when it comes to that. So, yeah, looking forward to connecting.
I think if there's any young strength coach or any coach at all, you got to go follow him. Because of what you said, you're so interactive and you're so willing to, and that's why I think initially when I first found you way back when was you were asking questions and you were having conversations with people. It wasn't that's stupid or that's wrong. It was like, why are you guys doing that? And how can I, you know, maybe you can implement that and stuff like that. So that's why I personally have always been a huge follower of yours, Monty, to be honest with you.
You know, if you don't ask, the answer is always no, right?
Right.
And so whether it's going to a local high school here in Texas or whether it's going to Westside, mm-hmm. you know, like if you don't pick up the phone and call Lou, or if you don't pick up the phone and call wherever you want to go, then you're never going to get there. Exactly. And, that's proven to be beneficial to me more than once with regards to reaching out to other coaches, because I mean, you might have a perception of somebody, but hey, can I come watch a session? You know, I'm a local high school coach. You know, I just want to learn. I really like your stuff. Or maybe it's, I don't know what you're doing, and I want to try to figure it out, you know. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're going to say absolutely. You know, now with COVID and everything right now, it might be a little more challenging. But,
right. But
you know, once this is over and before all this, you know, I don't know that I've ever been told no with regards to coming to visit anybody, but you have to put yourself out there.
You know, it's funny. You like indirectly influenced me on that because you would be talking with people like that. And I remember you talked about Rhodes earlier. It made me think of that. Like I remember 2019, I reached out to him because he was 45 minutes down the road and I'm like, oh, this is Matt freaking Rhodes. Right. Right. On Elite FTS. Huge, yeah. Awesome strength coach. I'm like, looked up to him for a really long time too. I'm like, he won't email me back. He emailed me back 5 minutes. Said, can you come up tomorrow? And it blossomed into a handful of visits and a friendship and a mentorship. You know, you never know where things are going to go unless you put yourself out there. So I think that's great advice for people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, last question, get you out of here. What are you grateful for?
Oh man, there's a lot. There's a lot. Family right now, you know, we've had a couple scares with some family members and they pulled through and my new Azel family, we're going through some things right now, grateful for them. And, you know, just the people in my life, man, that's so important. And right now that's probably who I'm most grateful for.
Well, Coach Sparkman, Monty, I can't thank you enough for being on here. Bucket list guest, man, and you're changing lives down there. And I'm excited for this new opportunity that you got, beautiful weight room, and I know you're going to do great things with those kids. So thank you.
Hey, thanks so much, man. Enjoyed it. Had a blast.
I appreciate it. Well, hey, everybody, go follow him on social media. If you don't, you're crazy. And everybody, stay strong.